My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
The exclusive sponsor of Grant and Danny's, the law firm, Condori and Murad. They'll guide you and your family in the right direction, help you to draft a will, set up a trust, or create a power of attorney. Schedule a free consultation with their estate planning attorneys right now at kmlawyers.com. Be sure to tell them we sent you to get a discount. That's kmlawyers.com. We are live at Nationals Park on what is becoming a prettier afternoon. Blue skies overhead. There were some rainstorms early in the afternoon. Tarp was on the field, so it's going to be in great shape for what looks like the start of batting practice about 35 minutes or so from right now. We're headed down to the field for BP. Why, you ask?
How come?
Dylan Cruz Day. The Nationals' top prospect, the number 3 prospect in all of Major League Baseball, according to MLB Pipeline, Dylan Cruz, is coming to the show. Just watched the video, and I'm a sucker for these, of his AAA manager, Matthew LaCroix, telling him he was headed to the major leagues and his teammates dogpiling him in the dressing room. Dylan Cruz has been waiting on this for a couple of months, frankly. I mean, he had a great spring training, went to AA, spent about half the year there, then was in AAA, and there was some thought he could come up really as of a few weeks ago at any point. I believe the reason it's now, the timing played out the way that it did, Danny, is it seems to me like with 31 games left, if you do math, he's not going to accrue enough at-bats to lose rookie status. And while that would sound like a silly reason, it's not anymore because there's new rules in baseball where
to incentivize it, yeah.
The Nationals, by having him win Rookie of the Year next year, if that were to happen, would get a draft pick at the end of the first round. The equivalent of maybe like the 30th or the 31st overall pick in the draft. And this PPI, as they call it, it's a incentive for teams to call guys up sooner rather than letting arbitration clock dictate when they're promoted, which we saw earlier this year perhaps with stars like James Wood. So the idea would be if Dylan Cruz is big league ready out of camp, keep him in the big leagues. If he's ready a week in, call him up. Because if you don't wait until May or June to save some service time, you can actually get a draft pick if he's the best rookie that season. And I think now the Nats can safely play him every day the rest of the way. He's not going to accrue enough service time, and he will be rookie eligible and potentially get them a draft pick next year.
Yeah, and keep that option open, right? There's no rule that says you have to do that either, right? If you go, you know what, he could probably use, for the sake of argument, I'm making it up, a month in the minors, a month in AAA to hone this or to learn right field more intimately, because that's where he's going to end up because they signed a center fielder. Who knows what could happen? But you keep that option open and you give him enough time to get his feet wet up here arrive at that level, to sink, swim, struggle, everything in between, and no decisions have to be made just yet. But you keep all options open.
When we get down on the field later and we talk more ball during batting practice, you just mentioned something about him in right field. I want to talk about where he ends up long-term. The reason you drafted Dylan Cruz second and not Wyatt Langford, probably, who made the big leagues out of camp on opening day with the Rangers, who's got a little more power, was because Dylan Cruz can actually play center field, and he plays it well. He's been terrific defensively in the middle of the outfield in the minors this year. But Jacob Young's been a platinum glove defender. He's a rookie. He's a former seventh-round pick homegrown. Could they keep him in center field going into next season on opening day? Have Cruz play right, Wood play left. As you said, would you move Cruz to center maybe and then go get a 30-plus homer bat in right field. Maybe you sign an Anthony Santander from Baltimore, and you drop a bunch of money on the big bat in the middle of your order who's going to change the game for you offensively. Something we can get into later in the hour when we watch batting practice and talk Nats. Reminder, 6 o'clock, 3 hours out, Kevin Hart at DAR Constitution Hall. We've got your tickets exclusively on Grant and Danny on The Fan this week. We're really excited about that. The Act My Age tour is coming to the nation's capital on September 15th. Have you seen Kevin Hart live, by the way?
I never have.
I saw him live at Capital One Arena. He was a 10. I don't like stadium comedic experiences as much. Now, I would have done that again. Like, if you said right now you could go see Chappelle at Capital One Arena, how many times?
You'll do it, yeah.
Gladly. How much can I give you? But I would prefer, in a perfect setting, like, my favorite place to see a comedian is actually DAR Constitution Hall. So that's a hell of a venue for him.
It's phenomenal. When you get so big and you're in 40% of all movies that get released in theaters, you could do stadiums. I mean, you could do FedEx Field if you wanted to. You know what I mean? Like, he's big enough to sell a place like that out.
We call that swifting, I think.
Absolutely.
Or in comedic parlance, it probably is Harding, honestly.
At this stage, yeah. I mean, he is the most prolific business comedian ever. And he's one of the funniest guys of all time. He's incredible. But in terms of that, he is a machine at building interest, so everything from social media to getting his fans to come out. So the idea that he would be in a spot like DAR is incredible at this stage. I mean, it's almost like seeing, I don't know, you could pick your Hall of Famer at the Improv. It's kind of that level. You know what I mean? It's incredible that he's doing that.
So I'm sure you watched the Josh Harris presser, if not live, you know, since then in its entirety. It's about 23 minutes long. He sat down yesterday in the interview room, same desk, behind the same table that Dan Quinn's going to be at, you know, after every single game. And he held court and he answered questions. Sometimes I think, though, like, my perspective being in that room sitting right there can be skewed a little differently than what it feels like on the outside. What did you make of the presser? Because I could tell you, sitting there, I thought he was fantastic.
Me too.
I thought he legitimately answered questions. I thought he provided reasons for things and perspectives for why even the name or the stadium and the timeline. It was way more than I expected. When I heard he was talking, I thought it was just going to be a box-checking endeavor. Not to knock him, but, hey, at some point, unless you're Dan Snyder or some owner who doesn't know what he's doing, you kind of got to just stand there and take some arrows and take some questions and wear it for a few minutes and then go about your life. And I kind of thought it was going to be that, but I thought he was not only well-prepared, I thought he really answered questions. Like, I was very, very impressed. What was your vibe watching from the outside in?
Impressed is the word. I mean, the someone that's obviously so – I mean, it's not as if he's a – you know, I don't even know how to say this the right way. He's not like some supermodel that's walking around strutting his stuff everywhere, like, you know, shirt open finance bro at the Hamptons. But even still, despite that, he's very comfortable in his own skin. You know what I mean? Like, even though he's, like, kind of by nature a little bit fidgety, a little bit nervous, sort of just kind of, you know, this is his effect on words, and he's sort of like that. Like, that doesn't sound like someone you would go, oh, yeah, that's the guy with $6 billion to spare to come by the football team. And yeah, that's exactly who he is. And so his answers, he's going, even if you don't love this answer, even if you don't love the response, the content of it, there's thought behind it. We're thinking about it. And it's not something that caught us with our pantaloons down. It's not something that ambushed us. Not something that we're not capable of handling. We're thinking about it. Here's our priority. Here's why. Here's how we're doing it. Here's how we're going about it. Here's what we want to do. All these kinds of things. And you're going, this is so forthcoming without necessarily giving away every state secret. Right?
Yeah, I thought there was just a lot learned in the 23 minutes, to be honest. One thing that I did not really know, but it was good to get clarification on, I was not aware that he publicly admitted yesterday. He basically said, I am involved heavily with the 76ers and the Commanders. And he didn't use these words, but he basically said, you know, I have businesses in the NHL and in soccer, right? Meaning, yes, he owns the Devils, but he doesn't really have a lot to do with what they're doing. And I don't know, maybe hockey's just not as big of an interest of his, but he views those as he likes owning sports teams. It's good business generally. But he said, I'm going to be heavily involved with basketball and football, which I thought was really, really interesting. He went into the differences of owning, you know, various teams and various sports, because I think that's something that's always missed on Ted Leonsis. And a lot of owners, for that matter. Kroenke among them, these guys that have multiple teams in all the different leagues. people act like, well, he's a better owner in this than that. I think you have to have different philosophies. If you try to own the same way in basketball, where a couple superstars gives you a chance, as in baseball, where you've got to build your farm system up and look at the long game, as in football, where there's no such thing as a long game, and you could probably go worst to first overnight. It doesn't make any sense to have the same paradigm. So I actually thought that was kind of a cool thing that he talked about. Cut 19, Darius, something I hadn't really heard him address.
Josh, as an owner, do you operate differently sport to sport? Like an executive, obviously, would build a roster differently. But depending on the sport, do you find yourself acting that way with hockey, basketball, football?
Yeah, so I'm pretty focused on the Commanders and the NBA, and I have partners that I work with on the other sports. And look, I think the fundamentals are the same, which is you hire the best talent. You hire the best coach, the best GM. And they hire coaches underneath them, and then you hold them accountable. You ask lots of questions. You make sure you're super knowledgeable and they're communicating with you, but then you let them do their jobs, right? And so my approach as an owner is to do it that way. I don't want to be, kind of controlling, roster decisions. Obviously, if I think something, my job is to keep it, on the road, right? Like if I think someone's doing something that really doesn't make sense, I'm not going to do it. But by and large, that's their job. And just because, I'm a great business person. I built, a big company doesn't mean that I'm going to be better than Adam Peters at picking a roster, right? So I defer, but hold people accountable for their decisions. And, obviously, and so I think that really is the same across sports. I mean, obviously, the nuances between – there's lots of nuances between the different sports. There's different CBAs, different – sports have hard caps, not hard caps. Certainly the number of players in the NBA is much smaller. And there's lots of nuances we go into. But by and large, that sort of approach is what I follow across sports.
So it sounds like it would be just a common sense throwaway comment to say – hey, just because I'm a smart businessman doesn't mean I'm going to build the roster better than Peters. That type of thought is what was lacking for 20-plus years.
100%.
And Dan never even said it. Like, you could just say it and pretend out loud that that's how you think and then still be a malcontent who wants to run everything behind the scenes.
Yeah, the odd pick still happened.
He wouldn't even pretend. I mean, A, he'd have to actually speak to say something, which he didn't. But even if he had, he never would have said that. He would never have been self-deprecating or even open the door, Danny, to the possibility that he didn't have all the answers.
I loved that summary, that one sentence, where I defer and I let people make decisions, but then I hold them accountable for their decisions. That's it. That's what ownership is. Right? That's it. That's the mandate. That is the whole point of this, where you go, okay, it's your call. But just know that this is a cutthroat business, this is pro sports in general, and this is in any job, any walk of life, where you give someone a lot of authority. You need to be held accountable for what happens. So if you take one guy and the dude that goes right after him is a superstar, that's important to know, right? We need to be accountable. It doesn't mean you get one wrong, you get fired, but you start adding them up, you pile them up, and on the whole, are you doing better than everybody else in this business where there's only a handful of these gigs? Yeah. I mean, again, that is what ownership is. It's not tyrannical. It's not just firing a guy because he looked at you funny or didn't call you Mr. Snyder, or it's not giving somebody 25 years to sort of putz around and maybe hope that it works out at some point. There's a happy medium there, and that's the whole point.
Stadium news in conversation with Josh Harris right off the bat was pretty compelling. He made it clear he doesn't expect any real movement until after the election. Said that it's kind of a lame duck period right now. There's just not a whole lot going on at all, let alone trying to get both sides to agree and everyone to come together on giving land back to the city, so that he and his group can move forward to try to build a stadium. But they are talking to all three municipalities still. He made it sound like all three were still in play. I found it interesting that he said even though he prefers that the practice facility and the stadium are going to be in the same location if he has his druthers, said it's not a deal breaker. Like there's a very real possibility that they could still have a facility in one state and a stadium in another city or another state, which I found fascinating. But on this, I think the most important development was cut five here, Darius, where Harris talked about a timeline. And that 2030 year that's been floated as when a stadium could open, which I didn't love. I thought that was frustrating to hear. That's too far away. He did say that's reasonable. That's kind of the expectation, even if it's not set in stone. This was Josh Harris yesterday.
How firm is that? People throw out the 2030 date for when you want it open. How firm is that in terms of when you, you know?
Yeah, it's a target. I think it's a realistic target. I mean, I wouldn't say that, again, like there's, you know, a lot, there's political things that need to occur. There's land, zoning, a whole lot of other things. A lot of it is not within our control. So there's no way to predict a specific date, but I think that's a reasonable target.
2030. Feels like a long time away. When you really start to do some of the math, it's not, but that means a lot more games over at their current stadium,
yep,
man. And for the season ticket holders and the fans that pour money into these contests, that's tough. Now, they're doing really good work to try to improve it.
Doing the best they can, yeah.
But that's a long time at a bad stadium.
Just, I mean, I remember these conversations we had a few years ago, kind of leading up to this. This is pre-sale, was a gleam in anyone's eye. And that was viewed as disastrous, right? Like any second past that 2027, I believe, was the original date before the lease expired.
That's the problem. Actually, I'm glad you said that. In my mind all along, 2028 was the idea for a new stadium. Mm-hmm. So it feels like they're 2 years behind now. And like, as a person in this town, or if you're a fan, that you got gypped out of 2 years at the new stadium and you were told something wrong, which probably isn't true. But we've just always assumed the lease is up. They'll have their ducks in a row. And thanks to the last group, that wasn't even close to possible.
Indeed. And again, they inherited this mess, right? And none of the political wranglings or posturing or whatever is they're doing at all. They're just trying to make chicken salad out of remnants and bones here. So, you know, looking at that, just I remember thinking, and I guess the way I think of it is the disaster is already here, right? So, like, what's one extra year of disaster, two extra years of disaster? Now there's a walk-away point, certainly, where you go, it's not worth waiting anymore, and let's just build something. I don't know what that is. I know for you, it just wherever it has to be built, you can build it on the moon as long as it's built, do something new. But
and it's amazing. It's got
to
be amazing.
To me, that any second after 2027 is, oh, my God, the volcano erupted, we don't have Pompeii anymore, we're screwed. It's like, okay, you're piling more ash on. Right? You know, the meteor has already hit. We're already scrounging for food, and we're all radioactive.
One of the big stories of the weekend, which kind of gets lost in the shuffle today, on this Monday, Grant and Danny, we're live at Nationals Park. It's Dylan Cruz Day. He's making his debut, so that's going to be a heavy part of our show the rest of the way. And, of course, you got CeeDee Lamb getting a massive contract for the Cowboys, the big breaking news. Brandon Ayuk back. Apparently in the news, and the possibility of him being traded back on the table. There's just so much going on. But over the weekend, we found out that the Sean Taylor installation that was such an embarrassment had been taken down and removed from the stadium, and that they're planning on actually doing the statue that we all anticipated the original installation to be. Josh Harris was asked about that and why they made that decision. This is just a layup. You know, this is a wrestler walking out of gorilla position, as they call it, through the curtain and just shouting a promo and getting a nice pop from the crowd, because you know this one's going to go over very well with this fan base.
Indeed.
I think that honoring our alumni and obviously Washington football, the glory of Washington football, three Super Bowls, we have a lot. But Sean Taylor is particularly important for obvious reasons. And I wanted to make sure that he had a first-class memorial, first-class exhibit, and so we've been working closely with the Taylor family and came to the decision jointly that it was probably time to look for something new, and we'll be considering that over the next season with the family. And so I was, you know, it's part of a bigger picture, right, which is that in the NFL, I mean, if you're in NFL, the fraternity of NFL players, right, so if I were an NFL player, I would look at, you know, how other – we have an incredible number of people that were really good, and so we're trying to embrace them all, but Sean Taylor in particular.
They're going to treat people better. We've kind of known that all along. They're going to treat their alumni better. They've already been doing that, and I think they got one look at that thing and said, yeah, get this thing away, please. Take this away from me. I don't want to look at this. I mean, they care about the team and the fan base, and the fan base spoke pretty loudly on this radio station and all over the market when that installation was initially revealed. Let's play one more clip here. This was Josh Harris meeting with the media ahead of the preseason finale yesterday for what was his Q&A of the preseason. The conversation came up about the NFL draft a few weeks ago, coming to D.C. Mm-hmm. I thought this was actually very newsy yesterday. It's not really a question of if, it's a question of when. He made it sound like, well, it's not a done deal, that, yeah, these conversations are pretty far along, and they got a pretty good idea of how it's going to work.
Yeah, I think we're going to get that done. I mean, we're talking to the league about it. It's a question of timing, and it's going to be a few years off. They plan away in advance. And, I mean, listen, think about the idea of having, and I'm not breaking news here, it's not done yet, but think about a draft on the mall or whatever and how exciting that would be for the city of Washington, for the NFL. So everyone sees that. And so obviously there's a lot of complexity to it with, you know, the park service. And now I'm lifting the covers a little, but, you know, there's things that need to get done. But I think that I believe that it will happen. And it's a question of when. And so, yeah, it'll be great. I mean, it'd be super fun to do that here, and I think great for the country as well, and great for the NFL.
That's a very different answer than we hope to have the draft one day.
Yeah, we think it's going to happen. That tells you that some phone calls have been made, some emails have been exchanged, maybe a Zoom or two. I don't know. But, yeah, that is exciting. I mean, that's one of those layup, fish in a barrel, no-brainer, how fun is this, you know – All the people doing the work behind the scenes, as you mentioned, you got to talk to the Parks Department and set up this permit with that permit and this number of people and these risers and this where does the electricity come from? Like, what's it plug into? I don't know. I don't care. But once it's done, you walk around and you're the crown jewel of the NFL there for a fortnight.
Michael Phillips was a part of that press conference, our buddy from The Fan in Richmond and the Richmonder. Let's get his thoughts on what Josh Harris had to say about the name Commanders and whether it's growing in popularity. You have not heard his thoughts on that yet, but you will as we continue. We'll also get to the bottom of last night's game and the roster with Michael Phillips next. We're also getting ready in just a bit to head down to the field for batting practice here at Nationals Park. It is Dylan Cruz Day.
Right.
You're listening to Grant and Danny on The Fan.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
If you want the real story behind the NFL, you need the Stinkin' Truth Podcast. Three-time Super Bowl champ Mark Schlereth breaks down the biggest plays, the biggest games, and the untold stories that make this game what it is. Follow the Stinkin' Truth in the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
Grant and Danny from Nationals Park, where we are live today ahead of Dylan Cruz making his major league debut. He and James Wood will be in the lineup for the Nats for the first time together against Juan Soto and the New York Yankees. Going to be quite a scene. Right now, though, on the BetQL guest hotline, bet smarter to beat the books. Download the BetQL app.
Visit BetQL.com. Our buddy Michael Phillips of The Fan in Richmond and The Richmonder, who I saw at the preseason game last night. It was great to see you in the press box, and it was even better to see you in a press conference where an owner of this football team answered questions for over 20 minutes from the media, and he actually gave some meat on the bone. What am I supposed to do with my hands?
It's truly a new day. And you were in there. I was in there. I'm a writer. We both got the microphone. Neither of us were told what to ask. Neither of us were told anything was out of bounds. You asked a great question about the name. He answered it, took it head on. I asked about the draft coming to D.C. He was ready for all comers there, and I also was not entirely sure what was going on or how to deal with it.
Yeah, what did you take away as a lead? I mean, he offered the, I thought, announcement of sorts that inevitably there will be an NFL draft, as you said, in D.C. He talked about the fact that he is spearheading the search for Jason Wright's replacement as a team president. He discussed 2030 as the realistic date to expect to play in a new stadium here in D.C. for his football team. And he also, while it was kind of a long-winded answer, indirectly, when asked about the name and whether they're researching its popularity, said that they are looking into it, absolutely, and they are considering options. Where do we start?
I think you start at 2030 because we follow it day to day. We know the ins and outs. We know the players, and we follow every incremental development. There's a lot of fans that don't, and as we talk about all the time, there's an increasingly casual level of Commanders fan, right? The person who used to bleed burgundy and gold and now is kind of waiting to be won back. And I do think that number is jarring when they see it written down. 2030, that's 6 years from now. That's so much football at that bad stadium in Landover. It's jarring to see and to realize, like, okay, that's where we are, and he's not doing that to, you know, because he's trying to, like, beat expectations or anything. That is realistic to be at RFK, and that's obviously what they want to do. I think that number's jarring to people because it's so far away, and you realize how much further they have to go. I think the two are inextricably linked. The second big one being the name. I do think the name is the thing the most people care about. I think he understands now is maybe not the correct time to fully rebrand, because now is not the Josh Harris product. We were there yesterday. They've done some nice things at the stadium, and certainly the team is making strides. They'll have a new team president soon. But if you think about the time it takes for a team president to make an impact, the time it takes to build a team around a rookie quarterback, the time it takes to develop a new stadium and have concrete plans for that, this isn't a Josh Harris product just yet. And I think rebranding, to me, comes with, I want you to know this is me. This is a Josh Harris product now, and this is how it's going to be known.
Michael Phillips of The Fan in Richmond and The Richmonder joining us here on Grant and Danny on 106.7 The Fan. I also took his answer on the name to be a really good explanation of why they're not doing it right now. Right? Not that they're not going to do it, but he basically said, we are desperate to have everyone come together around this outfit at this moment. That is, whether you like it or not, a divisive issue. You get into factions, yeah. You pick your name, you yell at someone else who doesn't like that name, and they're just not going to do that right now. But you tell me, if you had to guess, in 2030, when they open a new stadium, are they still named Commanders?
No, they have a new name. The other thing that he, indicated, which I love, is they're not going to do 9 YouTube videos and fan polls and all those things that line people up behind different names for a year. Think about how they did it in Cleveland. Everybody woke up one morning. There was a Tom Hanks video. We go, we're the Guardians. We guard Cleveland. Like, okay, we're the Guardians now. Last night we weren't. We were a different name. I woke up this morning, we're the Guardians now. That's how this needs to be done. We need to wake up one morning, and there's Matthew McConaughey, and he's got his arm around, Joe Theismann or whoever, and here we go. Here's the new name. Learn it, love it. Come on down, get your merch. But I think it does produce an interesting short-term dilemma, Grant, and I know you've talked extensively, as have I, about why people aren't going harder for Jaden Daniels. And I think part of that, I wonder if people don't want to buy a Commander's jersey because they don't identify with the name, because they think it might be changing again. If it's scaring people away,
well,
from the
there's
merch
no doubt.
Kind of thing.
No, not to cut you off, I'm sorry. That is a fact. I mean, there's just, why would you completely opt in and or make? Let's face it. I mean, gear is expensive. Legitimate purchases and throw money at something that you think could be gone in a couple of years. Which is why I said if they are going to stick with Commanders, then that would be fine if they came out and said that too for me. But I just think they needed to say something rather than kind of kick the can down the road. Because if it is actually Commanders and they're just kind of taking the air out of the ball, so to speak, then you're damaging any opportunity for growth by even leaving open the mere possibility that you would change the name.
Oh, completely agree with you on that. Every answer I've heard from the ownership group has kept the door propped open enough that it's more than a sliver. There's a breeze blowing in right now, Grant, and that breeze is I think a name change will come eventually.
All right, let's talk stadium. I don't think you were on the tour that I went on yesterday to see a lot of the changes, but you know, based on the press releases and what they've sent out, a lot of what they've done. I mean, they put a ton of effort and money into the lipstick on the pig, if you will, at the X over the offseason. They have upgraded so many of the things that people have complained about. One of the big issues that they hear the most is the time you spend waiting in line for food and drinks. They have now as many of those fast markets in their stadium as you're going to find anywhere in the National Football League, where you kind of grab and go and swipe your card. I think that's very smart. They're going to have quicker security, kind of a walk and scan situation rather than, you know, being patted down and everything, getting into the stadium. So that type of technology, those enhancements are very good. I thought the 1932 Club, which is sold out for the football season just about, is pretty amazing. The Tunnel Club down by the field looks like something you'd see at a new stadium where if you want to pay for it, you and a buddy can go open bar food, drink, hang out in the tunnel where the players come on and off the field. Like, those are now options at this stadium that didn't exist for cool, really nice ways to watch the game. They're doing as much as they can. There's only so much that can be done, but, I mean, what do you make of the commitment to the stadium, where just about everywhere you and I walked last night, that the carpet or the flooring was redone and there was fresh paint on the walls?
Yeah, I want to give them credit for making investments that won't have a financial return, right? You know, I'm sure they will sell a lot of booze at the Tunnel Club. I'm sure they will do well. But if you're talking about a six-year investment at that scale, carpets and flooring and all those things, you're not going to make your money back. And they're putting a lot of money into this that I don't know that they're ever going to see all that money back. I think that's a tribute to, you know, this new ownership group putting itself in there and saying, hey, you know, look, there will be a new stadium. It will be nice. But until then, we want to make sure you're taken care of and we do as much as we can. And as much as we can is kind of the phrase I keep coming back to. They can only do so much with that infrastructure. You know, that's a stadium that was built to sell food that got trucked in the night before. Not, you know, you've been to Dallas, you know, if you go downstairs in Dallas, there's this giant kitchen. It's probably the size of a basketball court, where they're just cranking out gourmet food, and there's guys with white hats and, you know, all fresh ingredients and all that. They don't have that here. They're making the most of what they have, and they're doing it for you know, maybe not altruistic reasons, but certainly for the reasons of keeping customers, not the reasons of making money. I don't think they're going to make a lot of money on this investment.
Michael Phillips was at the preseason game with the Patriots over in Landover last night covering the game. He joins us now on Grant and Danny. Talking football for a moment, who'd you think helped their cause last night?
Well, I loved watching the defensive tackles. That's going to be a tough decision there, and maybe end up keeping five. I think Fedarian Mathis, the size is intriguing. What he's done has been intriguing. And John Ridgeway is ready to go, and that matters. When you got Johnny Newton, you know, kind of, I don't know what his week one status is right now and how he'll start. I think that's a really fun position. I said on my show this morning, there aren't a lot of these position battles that I'm getting fired up about, because I just, when you're that bad of a team and you turn over the roster, there just aren't that many tough decisions of, oh man, another team's going to poach this guy. You know, that's tough. I'm still excited to see what they do with the kickoffs. I don't think anybody league-wide has tipped their hand as to what they're going to do. I think that will be intriguing week one, but I love that depth of defensive tackle. I think this team, you throw in Luvu, you throw in Bobby Wagner, I think they could be decent against the run, slash maybe pretty good.
How about on the offensive side of the ball? We didn't see Jaden Daniels. There was some pretty legit competition back of the wide receiver depth chart. Something I've been saying today, I just want to see if you subscribe to this theory. I would have a really hard time cutting a 6'4" athlete at wide receiver who seems to be able to box out DBs. And I'm talking about Martavis Bryant.
Oh, yeah.
I know it's been a long time since he played in a game, and it's been a longer time since he was really good, almost a decade. I don't necessarily care about that. I don't need him to go catch 70 balls or be Terry McLaurin. In terms of being their sixth wide receiver in a room devoid of some size, why couldn't you have a potential package for him on the goal line? We saw him score on a slant last night, you know, in the red area. Or, heck, deactivate him until you need him. But that's just the guy that I would want in my building, I think, based on their lack of size.
Boy, I liked the touchdown catch. I loved the 30 seconds after the touchdown catch. Half that team was on the field in the regular season. That totally would have been a penalty. Adam Peters runs over and daps him up. They were clearly really, really happy and excited for him. And that tells me he's a good dude. Like, they've taken to him and they like having him around. To your point as well, you need healthy scratches early in the season, right? As injuries pile up, your inactives each week are generally well known. It's the guys who are hurt who you're keeping on the 53. You don't have that in week one. So you can certainly make a case, keep him as the sixth. He's a healthy scratch in the first couple of games. Figure out where to go from there. He could also serve as a placeholder for receiver X, who you're hoping team Y is going to cut, because I certainly think there's going to be a very fluid roster situation over the next 48 hours.
Michael, much appreciate the time, buddy. Great catching up, and we will chat very soon.
I'll look forward to it.
Michael Phillips of The Fan in Richmond. We're Grant and Danny from Nats Park. Our double play comes your way next. We're also headed down to field level for batting practice in moments. You will hear us live from just behind the cage on the field at Nats Park next on G&D. The 2023 number two overall pick out of LSU will make his major league debut today. It's very warm down here, but the sun is out. The rain has gone away. It looks like a nice night for baseball as 10,000 Dylan Crews debut T-shirts are going to be given out to fans coming into Nash Park.
It's a cool afternoon, early evening, setting up for it, right? It's just very symbolic. So the first game of a homestand or of a series, a lot of times the teams will get out and take infield, right? Do early work in infield. The infielders were working just now. You saw C.J. Abrams and the cadre of first baseman, et cetera, in the outfield just now as they finished their early work. Crews, Young, and Wood, having finished all their efforts because they're playing tonight, walking in together. It was almost like a painting or a TV show, like a slow-motion Quentin Tarantino-type montage, because that's what the future is, and it's here tonight.
Well, it's an amazing night for a lot of reasons, but the Yankees are in town. And while it's been a long time since their 09 World Series championship, you know, the New York Yankees being here at the big league level at Nats Park in interleague play is a rarity, right? Minor league affiliates are going to mingle from time to time, but this is, in and of itself, one of those evenings when the Yankees come to your ballpark, that's a big deal. It's a bigger deal because Juan Soto's back. He is an MVP caliber player. Now, he's not going to win it because his teammate Aaron Judge is going to run away with the award. He and Bobby Witt Jr. of the Kansas City Royals going to finish first and second. But Soto, with already a career high in home runs, having a monster season for the New Yorkers, he's back here at Nats Park. And I got to tell you, Danny, it has been awesome to see Soto mingling, interacting with many of the staffers that are still here. You can tell he's just a great dude. Knows everybody by name, hugging people, working security and different things around the ballpark just while we've been watching him. Mark Lerner, the owner of the Nationals, just walked up and had a big embrace and a nice conversation and a big hug. There's a lot of 2019 vibes. I saw Soto and the baby shark, Gerardo Parra, now a first base coach, sharing what was a several-minute conversation. Soto's smile has been ear to ear
since he came out about 10 minutes after 3 ahead of Nats BP.
Yeah, hard not to notice, right? Just the as you said, those little details, right, of knowing somebody's story and caring, not just cursory to ask because you read that you're supposed to do that, but actually knowing and being interested in saying, how's it going for you? How was this thing? And those kinds of personal touches and details, you could see why he's been such a winning player in terms of personality everywhere that he's been, right? Like everybody gravitates towards him because that $1 million smile, or I guess maybe $600 million smile, is worth the price of admission, not to mention the incredible numbers and ability he has and how helpful he is to a team. But yeah, it's been cool. He's kind of like back on his old stomping grounds. Looks like he never left in some ways. The roster's turned over quite a bit since 2019 when he was here last, but still he knows a lot of people, a lot of friends.
Grant and Danny live on field level for batting practice. First Nat in the cage is going to be C.J. Abrams, who's laying his bunts down and getting ready for his round. Should let everybody know we are going to be simultaneously streaming our show live with the Nationals on their YouTube page with a video with us kind of narrating BP. So pretty cool opportunity for us to be down here at field level. Grant and Danny with you. We did this on James Wood Day. And now round two with Dylan Cruz getting promoted to the major leagues. For those of you familiarizing yourselves with Cruz, he's the number three prospect in all of baseball, according to MLB Pipeline. Obviously now the number one prospect in the Nationals organization with James Wood having graduated. 22 years old, played his college baseball at LSU, where he was a superstar, one of the great players in the country. Over his final 2 years, led LSU with Paul Skenes of the Pirates to the College World Series title last year. And in fact, in all 51 of his games last season prior to the College World Series, he got on base in every single game. Nobody handled velocity better at the college level at the plate than Cruz, who's got an advanced approach. He's a terrific defensive center fielder who will be playing right field tonight and moving forward for the remainder of this season, presumably for the Nationals. But a really good defensive player up the middle, who also happens to be a guy who can provide both power and speed. He was on what was a 162-game pace, Danny, of like 25 home runs and 40-plus steals at the minor league level. So even though he hasn't dominated, 270 average, OPS in the 790s, he's been very, very solid, been consistent at every level. And while there might not be an elite trait right now as he gets to the big leagues, he does everything very well.
Yeah, there's no weakness at this point. Anything you want on a baseball field, he can do, maybe short of pitch and catch at certain points. But very well-rounded. 6'2", doesn't blow you away with size, doesn't look like a whirling dervish like a Jacob Young running around. Everything is smooth. Everything is under control. He was put on this earth to square up baseballs. That's what it is. That's the skill set. That's what he's honed. That's what he's worked at for so long. You could just tell. You mentioned the very incredible high-level advanced approach that's, you don't really see from guys at 19, 20, 21, 22 years old. James Wood has it, certainly, and Cruz kind of has that same preternatural ability to spit on close pitches, to knock it out of his swing. He fires off his A-hack more often than guys his age usually do. That's why he's in the major leagues at this age.
Not a big guy, but he's kind of that wiry physical presence. I'm looking at him out there now in right field. He's bent over tying his shoe as he's getting ready to shag during batting practice as Ildemaro Vargas is in the cage. He's a little under 6 foot, right about that, right? Right around 200 pounds, maybe a little less. But he'll get stronger and fill out and be more physical. But the power this year has really come on as he's climbed the minor league ladder. If you look at the A-plus level at Wilmington, double-A level with Harrisburg, you're not going to hit a lot of home runs as a right-handed hitter in those ballparks. But as he got to Rochester and the weather warmed up, the ball started to fly off the bat. We've seen more extra bases from Dylan Cruz, who's going to be rocking his mustache that he's become very well known for in the minor leagues with the long flowing locks out of the ball cap tonight. We are on field level at Nationals Park. We'll be working you through batting practice and taking you up until pregame with Charlie and Dave today, right here on The Fan. So much to come on Grant and Danny, including Dylan Cruz's first round here, BP, ahead of his major league debut. You are listening to G&D on The Fan.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Hey, football fans, you want the real deal? The raw, unfiltered truth about everything going down in the NFL? Join Mark Schlereth, three-time Super Bowl champ, on the Stinkin' Truth podcast. He's breaking it all down for you. No punches pulled. From the game-changing moments that won or lost a game to the player evaluations, this is analysis you won't hear anywhere else. Mark's got you covered. So strap in and get ready for the ride, because this isn't your average football podcast. Follow the Stinkin' Truth in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norsides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey. And then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.